The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hi everyone, this is Jeremy Soule, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Brandon.
And this is a Nerdy Show microsode. That's where we talk about what you want us to talk about for about 15 to 30 minutes or so. And in this case, we went over because we wanted to, because this particular topic is something we're crazy about. It's a topic so specific that Brandon and I are the only people in the Nerdy Show network qualified to talk about it. So we brought some friends.
Which is, if I'm one of the people qualified, then that's just horrific.
Giggling, we have our first guest host.
Sorry, guys. You're adorable. Hi, I'm Lauren the Flute. I'm the leader of the video game cover band, The Returners. We've played around, so sometimes people have heard of us. And if they haven't, they've probably heard of Final Fantasy VI, which is just as good. And then I also sing and play flute and play video games online on YouTube and Twitch. So... yes, they call me the flute. I'm not actually a flute, but I'm close enough. So thanks for having me.
And I am Adil. I work at Fangamer. I am probably one of the newest members of the FG crew, but I do have style and grace. I have an unhealthy obsession with Batman.
Unhealthy?
Yeah, is there such a
so
thing?
You don't sleep a lot. You maybe not eat the right foods. Thinking about Batman.
Well, you never know.
Oh, secretive too, just like Batman.
Oh, maybe just fight
typical time. Typical Batman behaviors.
You know, I can't tell you guys, but
he's such a Batman.
If you guys have ever been to the Fangamer booth at PAX, that's probably me running around as Batman.
That's
oh, you
awesome.
Do.
I gotta, you know, draw people to the booth.
Do you use your batarang on them and then like pull them in?
I would like to, but I'd probably get arrested by like PAX security.
Batman doesn't get arrested.
Yeah, PAX has pretty strict policies on booth babes. Probably booth bats, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, booth bats are fine. So, I mean, it works out.
Well, until you create the incident by which they will
judge all future instances of Batman.
Well, fortunately, they don't seem to judge the Bandland tables the same way, because our bassist, he likes to dress up as Misty from Pokemon sometimes. Oh, that definitely gets attention.
I'm thinking for PAX West, though, I'll probably do Ganondorf, because it's probably much more relevant to Fangamer.
That is awesome.
Well, so we haven't even mentioned what we're here to talk about today, actually.
What are we here for?
We're here to talk about Terranigma.
Now, yay!
If you've heard of it, then you're probably as excited as we are. But if you haven't, well, sit back and let us tell you about one of the greatest video games you've never played.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite game on the Super Nintendo, besides Secret of Mana, obviously.
Within the nerdy community, people have not heard of Terranigma.
Ah, so sad.
I tried to tell Cap for years, like, it's the only thing that's ever made me cry. Ever. I haven't cried since or before.
It is a very powerful game, so I think we can probably safely say that we won't talk about the end of Terranigma, but we'll talk about
it in
general.
We'll do, like, a quick plot synopsis.
Yeah. Let's call it a safe introduction to Terranigma, but also with the insightful discourse that really is required of us as in this listener-requested format here. And this request comes in from Matt Mighty Cox, who says, it's been a long-time listener from when Brian Clevenger posted about the show on nuclear power way back when. You guys got me through some rough times, so this is some long-overdue payback. Keep it coming, because it's all good, especially Derpy Show and Wicked Anime. Matt is from Australia, and in response to us goofing on this fact a while back, he'd like to clarify that Australians do not drink Fosters. We drink an alcoholic beverage we've made from hoop snake venom, crocodile tears, and shark's blood, which is distilled in kangaroo pouches.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew they had pouches for a reason. I knew it.
All I want to know is their currency actually dollary dues?
Matt, you're going to need to follow up with us on that one. He also says Australians don't eat shrimp. We eat prawns that are 10 meters long and spit acid.
Sounds about
that
it.
That sounds like an enemy from Contra.
Or Fallout.
I was thinking Super Metroid.
Or, yeah.
Can we talk about all these
Australia
things?
Australia is Zebes. Zebes? Zabes?
I say yep. Zeebs, but I've heard people pronounce it all sorts of other ways, unfortunately. Yeah.
So Terranigma, right. He wants to talk about Terranigma. He says, this is the first game to give me an existential crisis.
It really does.
Wow.
Yes.
Plus, it's so hard to get a copy of. Even though I live in a country where it was actually released, I still had to emulate it.
Yeah, and we have to tell people real quick that it was fully translated into English, but never released in America. It was released in Europe, but not over here.
It's a Japanese RPG from 1995. That was created by Quintet, and it was available in like the UK, Germany, France, and Australia, but not America.
Yeah, they released it in Australia, who has crazy strict gaming laws, but not in America.
I think that it touched on some of the specific issues that America, more than other countries, are really picky about.
Yeah,
is like really just, picky about.
Just the intro talking about God and the devil,
yes.
Right there, totally.
Oh, yeah, and there's parts with like Jesus hanging on a cross in Brazil, I think.
Yeah.
It's the religious content, I'm pretty sure, that did it in.
On top of that, Nintendo got really shy of publishing anything in America for the Super Nintendo around the time 95 hit because they wanted to focus on the N64. So a lot of games just kind of got shut down for being released.
Was this that late on the console's life?
It
I
was.
Mean, you can tell from the graphic that it was late, but I didn't realize it was like overlapping with N64.
Yeah, in fact, Enix, who would have been the distributor, they actually had already shut down their American branch at this point.
It was December of 96 that it was ready to release in the US. Nintendo of America, at least, would not have allowed it because...
Damn you, Reggie.
They wanted...
I don't think Reggie was even on board, man. He wasn't even a gleam of his daddy's
alive,
eye.
Then. He wasn't built.
It's always been Reggie. It's always.
No, but he was like a robot that was built in like 2004 or something.
He was.
One final note from Matt, who requested this topic, says, this is the game that gave me a benchmark for epic stories and solid gameplay, and along with Planescape Torment, helped me define who I am and what I believe.
Oh, man, that's such a... Planescape Torment is amazing.
Which is also a Microsode.
Well, the reason
Microsode
I haven't beaten it is because it's like a 1,000-hour game. It's like a Baldur's Gate.
It?
It's a Baldur's Gate, you know, type D&D game with a way better story.
Everybody tells me I need to play it because it's like the example of that kind of game with actually good story.
It
and,
is.
Yeah.
But if it's a million hours long, I usually take like half again as long as everyone. And like a million and a half hours might be too many.
So to dive into Terranigma in general, it was called Tenchi Sozo, which means the creation of heaven and earth, but became Terranigma in all PAL territories. And it's part of what's considered Quintet, the development company's creation trilogy, or the Soul Blazer trilogy, or the Heaven and Earth trilogy, or the ActRaiser series, depending on who you ask.
Well, it's a combination.
Or the Terra Earth, I've heard that one too.
Oh well, it's part of a trilogy that exists with Soul Blazer and Illusion of Gaia.
Well, and it's also a trilogy that's not necessarily a trilogy.
Well, it's not related by story, but it has similar themes of like the destruction, rebirth of everything.
And
basically,
just like the creation of the world and humanity and civilization.
And the never-ending cycle.
And the contrast between light and dark and the emphasis on polarity and duality.
Yeah.
And what she said.
And grim emotional hardships.
But paired with hope.
Yes.
That's, I think, what makes it so beautiful is that they really have life and death as a cyclical thing and as like a partnership. So even when things are really like hard and ugly, they're also beautiful.
Well,
and
it's actually funny that you bring that up because... I might be jumping in a little too far, but the way Terranigma opens is you pretty much literally open Pandora's box.
Sure, can we talk a little bit about the story?
We'll share what the other titles in the trilogy are, and then we'll dive right into the story.
Okay, sounds good.
If you're considering it a trilogy, then it's Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia, which is the best known game in the series, and then Terranigma.
Also known as Illusion of Time in Europe, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like Terranigma should be called Illusion of Gaia, but that's for other reasons and you need to play the game.
Yeah. What was funny, though, is that a lot of people thought that then Legend of Legaia for the PlayStation.
Oh my God, I love that game. Can we talk about that game next? Oh, Jesus.
But I just remember like being like, oh, is that like a sequel to Illusion of Gaia? Because not understanding what Legaia or Gaia meant when I was like, you know, in junior high. So
the series could also encompass ActRaiser and Grand Stream Saga.
Wait, ActRaiser isn't related to these?
Yes, it is.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Quintet.
Thematically.
Wait, it's the same creator?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was Enix.
Oh, guys, guess what? Did you know that EVO, the evolution game, is also made by Quintet? If you go through and you play it, it's got a lot of the life and death, earth spirit. In order for some creatures to live, other creatures must die, but that's progress, and it's beautiful and also terrible. It's a very Quintet game.
No wonder I love ActRaiser. I had no idea it was related.
Yeah.
Jeez. Is Zelda Link to the Past related? Because I love that game.
Funny funny that you mentioned that, because that's how my friend sold me on Illusion of Gaia, was that he's like, yeah, it's a Zelda game. Like, it's another Zelda game for the Super Nintendo. Like, you know, not literally. Oh,
but like, that's gameplay style. I think actually that's how I was sold on it, too. I was like, oh, I like Zelda. Yeah. This looks cool.
Yeah.
Like, I played flute, and I play flute, so I was like, okay, I got this.
You didn't just play flute?
Bash?
Yeah. I've actually dressed up as Will for Halloween.
Ah. Nice. Oh, wow.
That's nice. My flute was not pink, unfortunately.
The main character from Illusions of Gaia hits people with a flute. That's his weapon the entire time.
That's all you need.
The thing is, Will uses his to do telekinesis. I need to learn how to do that.
And can you block, like, if someone shoots a fireball at you, can you spin your flute to block it?
I have never tried. Fortunately, nobody's ever tried throwing a fireball at me.
All right, well, stay tuned for that. Stand by.
Oh, God, no! No!
Lauren the flute blocks a fireball.
I will have my flute. We can try this. My right, best idea ever.
We need a can of hairspray. Or at least like a roll of toilet paper we can light on fire and just chuck it at her.
I have a fire phobia, actually.
Well, this will be great for you to deflect
yeah,
it.
Yeah, to overcome God. It.
What have I gotten myself into?
All right, okay, so we should get back to Terranigma.
We should get back to Terranigma. These are great games, though. These are all great games. Terranigma is easily the biggest in scope, both thematically and as far as the game itself. I
yeah, there's definitely a progression in the trilogy of just the game being, I think, just better in gameplay overall and just having a bigger scope and a more, I think, intense story. And just unlike, you know, other trilogies where, you know, by the time it's the third game, it's kind of like you can tell the developers are like kind of burnt out or out of ideas. Like with this, Terranigma is just fantastic in so many ways.
It's polished on every level. One of the things I think is really interesting is you can tell when a creator has a very, very strong vision of something in particular they want to say, because sometimes they'll just keep trying to say it until they get it right. And I really feel that's what Quintet did. Like, even with EVO, like, they're trying to explore the same themes. And I feel like as much as Grandstream Saga came later, it was kind of a bit more of a mess. I feel like Terranigma was where they got it. They said the thing they wanted to say. Almost without exception, it's just this beautiful.
Grandstream Saga is also just really awkward because of the controls. Like, they went and they broke into the weird, like, 3D market, and it's just really awkward.
And the graphics, the faces, there aren't any faces.
It's fun, but it's really awkward.
I feel like an entire show could be dedicated to the growing pains of going from 2D to 3D. That's why, like, I was like wondering, like, what happened to Quintet? And I realized that they just didn't survive the move to 3D as well as they could have.
It's also not technically Quintet. I believe it's mostly Quintet people, but under a different name. So it's kind of like the stealth Quintet game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They actually made Dark Cloud, so.
Wait, what?
No, I'm kidding.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say Dark Cloud is
no, but see, there's some similarities.
Yeah, Death and Rebirth, come on.
Specifically, the way Soul Blazer plays out, and you bring things back, specific parts of the town from the dungeon.
Yeah, and even ActRaiser is so similar to Dark Cloud.
Dark Cloud totally stole that.
Yeah.
I thought level 5 was the Quintet people with a new branding. But I also made that up, but I'm assuming that
to my knowledge, there's no connection. There could be, but I suppose, but there's...
The level 5, I think, is a lot less dark-natured. Like, they're a lot more happy fuzzy than Quintet. Yeah. Oh, Quintet. So I love them.
You mentioned that it seemed like such a clear statement. They were actually developing Terranigma to some extent before ActRaiser.
Really? Oh, wow. For that long?
Yeah, ActRaiser came out in 1990, and Terranigma stemmed from a game that they were 70% done with. It was an RPG that was going to depict the entire life cycle of a planet. But then someone said, hey, you guys want to make something for the Super Nintendo to be a launch title? And they were like, sure, okay. And they made ActRaiser instead and scrapped what was kind of the seed of Terranigma up until, you know, 95.
Which is funny because that's a really meta, like, application of just Terranigma and its story of, like, rebirth.
Yeah, it is.
I can't believe they were working on it before the Super Nintendo was even launched.
Yeah,
I mean, not it specifically, but the concept at least. Yeah.
They're really ambitious people. I will give them that.
They were.
Well, they're still out there. We just don't know what they're doing. It was written, designed, and directed by Tomoyoshi Miyazaki. He was the major force behind all of these games.
Is he still doing cool stuff? Can we track him down?
We should track him down because we don't know what he's doing.
Is that the same Miyazaki that made Dark Souls?
No, I knew someone was
because it's
ask
also
that.
A Miyazaki name who created Dark Souls. And that kind of fits, too, in Death and Rebirth, and it's dark. I mean, seriously, it actually does.
But the thing is, again, I would say that Dark Souls is more focused on the darkness and not on the balance.
I mean, you've beaten Terranigma, right?
Yeah, I know, but the thing that makes it worth it is that there's the hope and there's the love. Like, that's what really drives home the duality of Terranigma, is that the two halves are really balanced.
True. Let's talk about the story, because so far we're giving a lot of broad ideas, but not the specifics. Terranigma is pretty fascinating in that it starts you, essentially, you start in hell.
Well, there's the light side of the world and the dark side,
yeah.
And there's only this one town left basically in existence, and you can't leave it, and its name is Krista.
Well, the light side of the world is the exterior Earth that we know,
and
the dark side of the world is the Hollow Earth, which looks like hell, and you're in this one idyllic village with a handful of people.
Where you were born and are going to die.
Or never
die. Pretty
much, or
never die.
You're the last people on Earth, and that's kind of ill-defined, actually.
Yeah.
I kind of saw it as this stagnant kind of world that, like, or just little village just kind of stagnant of kind of the same thing happening every day. And because no one has any concept of a frame of reference of outside that village, that's just what their life is. And they never really question what's outside.
Well, I think you're right. I think because online it also states that this is like the world of decay. So
yeah,
they are kind of withering away.
And it's not really hell in the sense of like, you know, flames and people suffering constantly. It's just a sort of like, you know, away from light.
The underworld in Final Fantasy IV where you meet the gnomes, kind of like that.
Yeah, very similar to that. That's a good way of putting it.
There you go.
The thing that's really interesting is that, though, I think unlike that, you really get the feeling that you're walking around the inside of the world, because as you walk, they're using this like weird sort of mode 7 thing to let you know that you're not on the normal surface of the world. You think the way you think about it, just it's very odd. I didn't make
like,
a connection.
Yeah,
to
I'm
at
like
all.
The inside of a sphere.
Oh, because you can see the ceiling as it rotates around you as you move. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird and claustrophobic and really, really surreal. Like, I had no idea when I started the game, like, how I possibly fit into any other part of the world.
Yeah, well,
because it's so strange.
You start in the typical JRPG village, and then all of a sudden you leave it, and you're like, whoa.
That music hits.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite songs. But, yeah, so you're in this village. You have a best friend named, like, Ellie or whatever, and there's an elder. And at some point during the beginning, there's this door that was never unlocked before in the elder's basement, and you go down it, and you just find this box with a demon in it named Yomi, and that's when like shit hits the fan.
I think it's worth noting also that your main character, because like a lot of times in RPGs, like your main character gets into trouble because that's what your main characters do. But like Ark, the main character of Terranigma, has a personality, and he's this like obnoxious spoiled brat. Like Link smashes pots, and like people are like, oh whoa, but people are like, Ark, why do you keep destroying everything?
Doesn't
like
he chase chickens? Isn't he a chicken chaser?
He chases chickens.
He's a chicken chaser.
He throws things at people. He's just this obnoxious, whiny brat.
He basically fucks up the world by opening this box, and everyone in the village freezes except the elder. And he's like, well, now you got to go out and fix this problem.
Yeah, he's like, you fucked up. Got to go fix it.
Yeah, so he sends him there's like 5 different towers in the underworld, and you have to defeat them. To bring back like the souls or reanimate the bodies. I haven't played this in a long time.
But then it also revitalizes the continents on the surface world.
It brings them back from, sunk under the ocean.
I think it's like North America, South America, Africa, Eurasia,
Australia,
and then Australia.
Yeah, there's five. Yeah, five continents,
and then Antarctica is not really considered. But yeah, so then you basically are like recreating the surface of the Earth to the way we know it as you're going from the underground. One thing that I wanted to point out that we've been talking about the story a lot, but like we haven't really been focusing on the gameplay, and I think like even just from the beginning, your weapon is a staff, and like you are given so many options for combat because you have a jump button, you have a dash button, and you have just a lot of ways of approaching combat because of that. And I think that's one of the reasons that really captivated me to the game, is because with Zelda, it's like you just have your one standard attack, and then you have your other items and stuff. But
you got spin attack. You can spin.
You've got your spin attack, yeah. But I feel like.
Right, you
really
can combine it. Like you can,
charge. Yeah. You can charge and jump. You can just jump. You can.
Yeah. There's like a slide attack.
The dive attack.
You have a slide, and so you just have like so many options on combat. And I think that level of depth really captivated me, along with the story.
Did anyone use magic? Because I remember you could use magic in the game, but I didn't really use it a whole lot.
Magic was really weird because it was a consumable item, which, as we all know in RPGs, if you have a consumable item, you never use it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one. Unless it's a mother game, and then you have to use the items, apparently. Yeah.
Honestly, for everything that works about Terranigma, the magic system especially is completely superfluous. There was only one instance where I was fighting a boss called Bloody Mary, who's a ghost.
We can have a whole podcast about her.
She's not hard if you just actually use your magic.
Just leveled up. I overleveled and then I could fight her.
It's easy to overlevel, and if you use magic, you can obliterate her. But she was the only point in the game where I used magic. And the other time I tried to use magic out of desperation was the final boss, who none of your magic products work on him.
So, I think Bloody Mary is the only boss who is weak to magic and all others are immune.
So there you go, save up.
So it's like you're supposed to use magic as part of your standard combat routine.
But you never would because
you've
it's
got a
such
really
a
good weapon. You don't you exactly, can deflect yeah. things with it. Like you don't even need anything else.
Well, I really like that the weapons, some of them have like different specializations. So like you'd go back and use like a slightly older weapon sometimes against certain enemies. I thought that was an interesting element of strategy. Like they put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. So after you overcome this underworld thing, essentially the world up top has a chance to be revitalized and it's sort of your duty to go off.
Well, the elder's like, well, you need to go up there and start fixing everything.
Yeah.
And he's like, but if you go, you can't come back.
Right.
And I mean, like, he's like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
You go. You end up going, and it's really sad.
And they actually do a pretty good job of giving your little hometown, like, character, so you kind of get to know the people. You have, like, your little girlfriend, so you're, like, you actually feel some sense of loss that you're not going to be able to go back, because Ark has a personality in these relationships.
Well, yeah, and there's lots of scenes where she's like, you're coming back, right? We're going to be together forever, and then you just, like, yeah, I'll be back, and you don't.
He seemed kind of broken up over it. What's interesting is when you go back to the Earth, it's the same kind of format that they pioneered in both ActRaiser and Soul Blazer, which is that it's a barren world and you have to then overcome dungeons essentially
to bring life back.
To bring it back, and you do it in stages. You bring back the plants, you bring back
birds.
The birds,
and then you bring back the wind so the birds can fly and animals.
And then later on it gets more complicated of like civilization and like
you make the horrible decision whether or not to resurrect mankind.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the game kind of falls off the rails for a little while. I feel like that chapter kind of loses sight of what it's doing.
Well, that was the first time I got depressed because it's like, you can bring back mankind, but if you do this, you can no longer talk to the animals. Because you were friends.
Yeah.
Well, you could talk to birds, like you meet like this like prince of lions and all these, and you can talk to them. And then it's like, if you bring back humans, you will no longer be able
like,
to talk to them.
Basically, like, by doing this thing that you were compelled to do, you lose everything you already have.
And it's interesting because you run into some of the animals who were characters and you can't speak to them.
It just says ... and then you're just like, I hate my life. Why did I do this?
Because it's Quintet and they want to hurt you so that you can reflect on the beauty of friendship and the transience of connection or something.
Illusion of Gaia is one of those things where it's very similar, where it kind of gives you that like, yeah, you can save the world or do this thing, but then you sacrifice everything else. Like, so in Illusion of Gaia, you choose to save the world and basically prevent this comet from destroying humanity yet again and repeating the cycle of humanity going through civilization, kind of getting more and more advanced, and this comet comes and then basically just puts humans back on square one. God, is that Sisyphus with the rock?
I believe it's Sassafras.
Sassafras, okay.
Yes.
But it's kind of like that, and then basically by stopping the spirit of the comet and then
this allowing
the
Final Fantasy VII, isn't it?
No, shut up.
Yeah. Sorry, it just sounds
similar. Funny is all this stuff, like, all these things predate, like people know Majora's Mask about the moon going to hit the Earth and destroy it all, but Illusion of Gaia did that first, and people know Terranigma of going from your comfortable village and then going to, like, this unknown Earth, and, like, Skyward Sword is the exact same way, but was much worse in every way. I'm not sure if people were directly influenced by Terranigma or Illusion of Gaia or Soul Blazer, but they did a lot of things that people don't realize. But anyways, going back to Illusion of Gaia is that by allowing human civilization to advance and not get destroyed and become kind of our modern world, everyone loses their memories of what had happened, and people who were friends before don't really know each other, and everyone just kind of loses sight of what happened during the game.
Illusion of Gaia is pretty fascinating because it's a game that has, one, a really, really sharp story with great character interplay. But it features landmarks from the world that we know, but the land masses themselves are completely different. And then at the end of the game, when you're on the surface of the comet looking down on the Earth, you see the shapes reconfigure on your map as though the presence of the comet created a event by which myth and reality became blurred. And in solving that problem, you've returned reality to what we currently exist in.
That's
and
too deep for me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. One was hard. I remember some of it being hard, but I also haven't played it in like 10 years.
I think it was harder than Terranigma because it was less of an RPG and more of an adventure game, but it still had heavy combat.
Terranigma was the hardest one emotionally.
That's true. Well, so Terranigma was more mature, like, and I don't mean like in a like, haha, bad words, but like actual maturity. Terranigma really developed its characters in a deeper way and also had more painful costs.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. Like,
I mean, there's the sacrifice of Hamlet and Illusion of Gaia, I know, hit some people pretty hard, but
a pig who dives into the flames of some cannibals so that you won't get eaten.
They're not originally cannibals. They're just desperate and starving to death.
No,
that's in the American version.
Really?
So, yeah. So in the Japanese, they were cannibals, but they were censored to just be starving.
So in America, they changed cannibals to poor people. Thanks. Great America.
Yeah. That's really people. Interesting. But, I didn't know that.
But both games, I'm not too familiar with Soul Blazer, but both Illusion of Gaia and Terranigma had some pretty weak translations from what I read.
Oh, man.
A lot of people joke about Terranigma, I remember like reading in forums back in the day, was that there's like the villain and you bring him back to life, you know, mistakenly. And his line is, "I thank you for arousing me." Because arouse can be defined as awaken, but when people think of arouse, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you. How do you know he wasn't aroused?
That's
oh,
true.
Dear.
He just
woke up.
Yeah.
10,000-year-long morning wood?
Thank you for arousing me.
Oh, God.
Oh, Baruga, so, you dirty dog.
One thing that I'll give Terranigma credit for that Illusion of Gaia did very poorly. So I work as a copywriter in my day job, and I do a lot of proofreading and editing, and I'm like, guys, can you keep it between first person or third person? Because, like, Will be talking like, I did this, Will did that. And I'm like, wait a minute, no. Will, why are you narrating yourself in third person? I don't know.
I remember reading that some of the lines that are attributed to certain characters are incorrect in Illusion of Gaia with the way they did it. Like, certain characters are supposed to say something, but they attribute the line to somebody else.
That would make Seth and the fish make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
does he gets eaten by the fish and then he becomes the fish or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, like, one of your friends in Illusion of Gaia, at one point, I think he, like, falls off a boat and then gets eaten by a fish and then
he becomes
a fish. I think there's something about it. I know in English, the translation is that he's like, "I am Riverson," but it was a mistranslation of Leviathan.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a big difference.
Like, Riverson makes sense because they're on a river and he is the son of the river now. Like, you know, but he's actually, you know, Leviathan, which is a sea beast.
A sea god.
Yeah.
He becomes a gigantic fish, so I guess either one will do.
I need to go back and play that game, because I do not remember 90% of what you guys have talked about.
It's a weird game.
It's actually my favorite. I played Terranigma for the first time very recently, leading up to this Microsode, and I really enjoyed it, but Gaia still got first place in my heart out of the Quintet games.
Illusion of Gaia, I have a very, like, kind of unwarranted dislike of, because of reasons unrelated to the game. Because I am also a huge fan of Lufia 2. Like, that is probably my favorite Super Nintendo RPG.
It's a very good one.
Yeah. And so Lufia 2, like, I know that game has a lot of really, really crappy flaws, but there's a lot of about Lufia 2 that I just adore. And I only played it using an emulator because, you know, being a poor kid with, like, an allowance of, like, maybe $20 a year or something. So finally one day in college, I saved up enough to buy Lufia from someone on a forum. And so I buy Lufia 2 and I'm super excited to play it, but I was at college at the time and my Super Nintendo was back at home. And finally I get back home and I try it out, and it turns out that the person put the Illusion of Gaia ROM chip inside of the Lufia 2 plastic case.
What?
Oh,
so
no.
I start the game and Lufia 2, you know, I put in Lufia 2 in my Super Nintendo and it's like Enix. I'm like, wait a second, this wasn't published by Enix, it was Natsume. And then it, like, you know, Illusion of Gaia has a very grand opening, you know, with, like, music and stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I messaged the guy, and it's been, like, a month since then. And he just was like, oh, too late. Joke's on you, asshole.
Oh, man. Almost like the time where I went through all these hoops to get you a copy of Terranigma, Cap. And it ended up, you finally got it. And we finally got kind of a working Super Nintendo that's, like, region free, and then the game was in what, German?
Yeah,
that was great.
That's exciting.
I think it was $80, and it was in German.
You know? Yeah, I ended up actually my Terranigma source. Really, the only thing we can advise is that you do the ROM deal, because no one has, despite popular demand, it's never been brought to the Virtual Console or anything.
I mean, it's ready. It's done.
Yeah, which is surprising, because, like, you'd think that, like. Like, that's how I imagine Virtual Console being used, and it seemed like they were doing it for a bit with, like, Sin and Punishment, but then Terranigma never, I mean, is it, it's not even out in the European virtual console, is it?
No, it's not.
So since you guys had mentioned that Terranigma perhaps coming, like not being released in the US was more of a timing issue, because I was always just assumed that it was Nintendo of America censors. Like, I would assume that the game would be in some ways too controversial, and that's part of why they haven't brought it over. Like, again, like playing through Mother 3 for the first time, I'm like, oh, I see why they're hesitating to bring this over, because there's some stuff where you're like, what would you do with this? Like, do you think that that's part of why maybe Terranigma isn't on the virtual console, or do you think that maybe Nintendo has chilled out and it's not a content thing?
No, I think it is a content thing, because I recently, like, Kat played it and it reminded me of certain things that they would not be able to do in America. Like, you were telling me about some of the like the villages or like the symbolism that they just would never.
Well, there's
brought here.
I mean, there's religious,
they would have to
iconography,
rework it.
There's drinking, and I just, but honestly, in this day and age, I don't think it would be an issue. I think
they would have to redo it. They'd have to replay the whole game. They'd have to redo those scenes or edit them.
I genuinely don't think they'd bother. I think they'd slap a teen rating on it.
They would let
the
giant, like, Jesus on the cross.
You're a Christian and you go into a church, you fucking see that every damn day.
Okay, true, but have you ever seen a game with that?
Super Nintendo game. Not a Super Nintendo game, but the Super Nintendo doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
it's a concept. It's not a reality. So I think it would be fine. I really do. But then I also want to give a shout out to any cool game stores that sell functional bootlegs of Terranigma.
Which is where you got yours,
which
right?
Which is how I got mine.
The first time I played Terranigma, I didn't have a gamepad. And do you know how hard it is to do those combos on, like, using the arrow keys?
Yeah, that was...
Because you can't hit more than two keys at once. And I don't think you can hit up and right at the same time, but you can hit up and left. So it's really hard to do a lot of moves.
It's like that puzzle in Chrono Trigger, which was kind of like accidentally anti-emulation.
I don't remember that puzzle.
There's this puzzle in Chrono Trigger when you first go to 2300 AD, and there's a code to open a door, and you press like LR select and start or something like that. And a lot of times emulator, or just Windows in general back in the day, especially like Windows 95, 98, couldn't process more than several button presses at a time on a keyboard.
Oh no, so you would never be able to get past that.
So the way you'd have to do is you'd have to map LR start and select all to one key and then press
amazing.
It that way. But, like, you know, it was just unintentional. It was just a kind of a quirk of Windows. But then people were like, how do I do this? How do I do this? You know? I see some other games had some pretty interesting anti-piracy functions back in, like, the 16-bit days, which I was like, I didn't think piracy was that big of a deal back then. But, like, I know Earthbound is pretty famous for its anti-piracy, where the game will just give you an insanely high encounter rate. And then when you get to the final boss, the game will crash and wipe your card.
What?
Yeah, you haven't heard about that?
No, because I did emulate it, because I think the first time, because I didn't know what it
and when they finally started coming out with, like, more sophisticated emulators and ROMs and stuff, they had, you know, basically workarounds to those quirks.
Nesticle.
Yeah. That's actually, like, one of the things is how I discovered Terranigma was through emulation, was because, you know, most of the times you couldn't find a website that had every ROM ever. Like, you just had somebody with their own kind of handpicked collection of, oh, here's Mario World, here's Zelda, here's, you know, Super Metroid. Here's Mega Man X. But, like, most of the times you couldn't find more obscure games unless you really knew where to look. And finally, there was this one guy, and, you know, he had his games on this website, and he had reviews. And I remember they were all pretty reasonable reviews about games. And then he had one about Terranigma. And it was in all caps talking about how this is the greatest game ever, and it's better than Zelda.
You know when, like, it's all caps. He means business.
And I was like, you know, like, he's not typing in all caps for everything, and he's giving everything a reasonable review. Like, he's talking about Super Metroid not being for everybody because of the exploration aspect, and he's talking about, you know, whatever complaints he had about the games that were really reasoned. But then when he got to Terranigma, he was like, this is the best game ever. It is better than Ocarina of Time. It's better than Link to the Past. It is better than anything you've played. No one's ever heard of it, but you need to play it now. And I
kind of agree. It's something that, even if it's not your cup of tea, it's an experience that you haven't had that you need to have. You
exactly,
need to have this
yeah.
experience.
And then I remember around the same time, I had met a person on a forum named Terranigma Freak. And, you know,
tells it right there.
If he's out there, I mean, I don't know where he is these days, but if he's out there listening to this podcast, I wanted to say to you that, God, I'm so embarrassed of the name. Adil Link, you know, because Adil Link, my original character.
Wow.
Says hi.
That's amazing.
And do not steal.
You know, reach out to me if you can, because that was part of the reason also. I was like, if this guy likes Terranigma so much that he made his screen name about it, like, I like Zelda, but he's a freak about Terranigma. I gotta play this.
He's Terranigma Freak.
So it deals with some pretty significant mythological themes, and I feel as though there's a specific mythological undertone that's in these games about civilization having existed and died in a cataclysm and needing to be brought back, I feel like there is a specific, relatively obscure to the Western world, mythology that talks about that, but I could not for the life of me pinpoint one that actually proposed that specifically.
Battlestar Galactica. Done.
There is like a really common concern about us being our own undoing. And I think that that is actually really common in, I mean, in science fictional media. And I mean, not to like make too much of an assumption here, but I think to a large degree, like you can have cultural trauma that you work through, just like some individual creators have like their personal trauma that they work through with their fiction. And like Japan had some cultural trauma that they went through in the 20th century. And I think you'll see kind of like the risk of absolute destruction caused by humanity is a very real concern in a lot of like video games and other things.
And that's
like that.
That's a very common theme in Japanese media, you know, humanity and technology getting so advanced that it basically destroys what is left of the natural earth spirit. Because I think now that you mentioned that, I think Illusion of Gaia, the final line is like, yeah, humanity has been saved and it can advance and civilization can be at what we consider our modern level. But the earth is now sad because it has essentially been forgotten, like the earth spirit.
Yeah, Quintet is definitely very interested in like, I mean, they're really interested in the cost of things because there is always going to be a cost. And I do think that they really make you feel that, whether it's like your character having to give something up or the trade-off with the world.
And that's where, when you mentioned it's a mature game, that's like definitely the sort of thing where like your actions have consequences and there really isn't a purely happy ending, you know, like,
yeah, which is really hard. And I think that's one way in which Quintet games are different than a lot of other games, both on like the large full plot level and like the individual character stories. Like, I will never forget, I guess if you guys haven't played that much Soul Blazer. So in Soul Blazer, unlike the other two games, you don't play like an ordinary person. You actually play kind of like this like emissary of a deity. So you're basically an angel of some sort gone to Earth to try to fix things.
So like ActRaiser?
Oh, it's like similar? ActRaiser, yeah.
The thing is, in ActRaiser, like you are a manifestation of the deity. In Soul Blazer, you're kind of like his little dude. You're like his soldier.
You're my little dude.
I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I always interpreted him as being more of an angel. But like you have this device, this magic wand that lets you talk to plants and animals or see into somebody's soul or heart or mind because you're not human. So you can have these supernatural powers. And so you kind of get to have these little details that don't actually have anything to do with the overarching plot. Like there's this one section where you go into an underwater area and there's all these mermaids and things, but there are these two dolphins. And if you go into, I think it's the dreams, actually, I think you go into the dreams of the dolphins, you find out that they were a father and son who were shipwrecked on a raft and they died of thirst. And then they were brought back as these dolphins. And so there's this like death and destruction and suffering and then this new life and this new rebirth. And so you're like, okay, well, I'm glad that you're happy as dolphins. I'm sorry you had to suffer as humans. And like, why is that there? Because that's not overarching plot characters. That's not something that really like ties into like Angel Saves the World, but like that's so intrinsic to the way that Quintet wants to tell stories and the sort of thing they want to explore,
it's
that like on
things.
Every level that stuck with me.
Yeah, that's definitely very Quintet.
The most famous scene perhaps in Terranigma is the scene of the goat sacrifice.
Oh no, I just remembered the goat sacrifice. I was like, what? Oh, that's very, very fitting. Like one dies so that others may live.
Yeah. I mean, that was Hamlet's entire ideology in Illusion of Gaia, was that I'm going to basically kill myself so you guys can have bacon and instead of eating everyone else and each other.
I really think that they revisit these themes over and over again. And I think that the way it's handled in Terranigma, again, is a little bit more mature than the way it is in Illusion of Gaia. Nothing against Illusion of Gaia, but it's like they took their idea and were like, let's have a slightly different, slightly more advanced way of exploring the same thing.
You saw that a lot, actually, in ways of an idea wasn't fully realized, and then the second or third game, like a game afterwards, kind of took that idea and did it differently. Like, if you look at Mario 3, the whole flight mechanic is you know, much more advanced in Mario World. And I think that's possibly how they wanted to do it, or after they saw how it worked in Mario 3, that, you know, that's what they wanted to do. Earthbound, I always have considered as, like, a soft remake of Earthbound Zero.
That's what I've been told.
That, like, it's essentially the same game, but they couldn't do what they wanted
story,
to
I think.
Do.
I haven't played Mother 1, but I've been told that this story is similar enough that if you've played Earthbound, you've had the superior version of the same experience. But then people disagree, so
it is, I haven't done just, it. I guess to put my two cents on it, you're 100% correct. It is essentially a remake. I mean, it's kind of like how Star Fox 64 is a remake of Star Fox.
Yeah, that was the other example.
But at the same time, in Earthbound Beginnings, as you get into the final act, the story takes a really drastically different turn that you don't necessarily see coming, especially by comparison to Earthbound.
Yeah, that's true.
Much
okay,
darker.
Now I'm even more interested in playing it. Okay.
And Super Metroid is a very kind of, I mean, obviously the story continues after.
That game is also sad.
Metroid 1, yes. But it's also does a lot of very, very similar things that I'm sure that they were like, hey, we wanted to do this on the NES, but we couldn't. And now we've got this much better hardware that we can do what we wanted to do.
But see, that's one of the things I think is really interesting is the examples that you're giving are a lot of like gameplay similarities where like they kind of build on as they learn the technology better. But like, I think what Quintet does is from a more narrative perspective, they go back to the same themes and the same stories. And like, and I assume that the only way that that gets like more mature or whatever is just that they think about it more and they get to be more mature storytellers. But it's I think it's kind of different.
Yeah.
Because it's not the technology. It's them.
Yeah. Because, I mean, all three of those games were on the Super Nintendo, so that does answer that.
But it is amazing to look between Soul Blazer and Terra Enigma, because I think Soul Blazer is pretty early on the system, and Terra Enigma, I guess, apparently is even later on the system than I thought, and it's just pretty
drastically
incredible.
Well, different.
That's why I am just so impressed with the Super Nintendo, because even, like, compare, like, Final Fantasy IV to something like Seiken Densetsu III, or
Comet
Lagoon, like, Star Ocean and Tales of Phantasia are basically, like, PlayStation games running on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Do you know anything, and I know I'm getting off track and I don't care. Do you know much about Star Ocean for Super Nintendo? Because when I realized there was a Star Ocean for Super Nintendo, I had to find it on an emulator and played it. And there was voice acting in it, and I don't know if that was added later. No, that was legit in the game.
That was in the game.
There was voice acting in a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Damn,
Tales of Phantasia also did that. Yeah. It's in English, and it's not like crappy English. It's like, it's just like a Star Trek kind of like, you know, captain's log, you know, some say the universe is like a star ocean.
Oh God.
I think they say the same thing in the second game.
Yes, they do.
We're in the second star
game,
ocean.
Which is weird because the first game has actually pretty decent voice acting and didn't come out in the US, but the second game.
Oh God. The second game
terrible
voice
acting.
It's so bad it's good.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Some of their attacks, you listen to it and you're like, what the hell did he just say? I'm reading the attack, but that's not what they said.
And then they like forgot to translate tractor beam. So like Rena's like, hey, he'll tractor beam. I have played way too much Star Ocean 2. I'm sorry.
What did she say?
Air slash.
Oh man, that's all I did.
Air slash.
Let's talk about that game next. So Terra Enigma.
So the point in Terra Enigma that really veers in a direction that's beyond Soul Blazer and beyond Illusion of Gaia in a lot of ways is it's divided up into four chapters, and the chapter Resurrection of the Genius, when you bring humanity back, the whole agenda of that time, and it's kind of ill-defined, is you need to find the brilliant minds of humanity and stimulate them and help them flourish.
Well, don't you help them like create inventions and make technology flourish?
You do.
You help Anderson Bell. You help him build the telephone.
You help Christopher Columbus.
Yeah. All the way up to Neo Tokyo.
Yeah. It gets really weird because in this chapter you realize, oh my God, something is happening with time. And whatever, however I think I understand how time works in this game, it doesn't. Because all of a sudden, human technology rises from feudalism to the industrial age to the modern age within a pretty narrow scope, all based on Ark influencing things, negotiating trades, building up the economic index of the towns, believe it or not.
I believe that they took the creative stance of just basically saying, no, Ark doesn't age. This is just all paraphrased.
Well, except that the characters around him who he connects to, like
Roy? No, what was his name?
Royd?
Yeah, Royd.
Royd Rage! He does have Royd Rage.
Oh!
Royd!
Hey. Yeah, because he still uses like a sword and shield, and then you're like fighting guys with like laser guns, and he's got a sword. Yeah, it's okay.
Cool. I think it's just you can't account for everything in that kind of progression of a story. So
they're not perfect guys.
It is odd because you do feel kind of at that point outside of time and question the narrative there. But it's also interesting because then we see it as in some ways more of a direct representation of our world than Illusions of Gaia was when they had all the ancient landmarks and so on, because Gaia was meant to be another case of a world before our world. And in this case, you're actually developing the world that we now exist in, where you have characters like Christopher Columbus and Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
It's
I know you go to France. where you meet your best friend, but she's like the light version of your best friend, Ellie.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing, is that it does light world, dark world in a way that's more narratively...
Well, there's light and dark counterparts, I think, to some of the characters, and that actually becomes a major thing later that I want to ruin, but...
But yeah. I think
it's not good and evil. It's different worlds.
It's just different worlds. Like, again, kind of that like moral grayness that Quintet does very well. And I think just the whole light world, dark world was done in a really cool way, which isn't just like Link to the Past, where it's just, oh yeah, this is just everything is bad and evil and everything is good and prosperous here. It's just two different worlds that are connected and have...
But they're also kind of opposing factions, like the deities or whatever you want to call them that run these worlds, like the god and devil, are actually at war with each other while this is all kind of happening. Not directly, but...
But it's not like the people all in the dark world are all necessarily evil and
no.
trying to...
No. But they are of the darkness and are doing its bidding unwittingly, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Quintet is very interested in showing that there's a price for everything. So while you can celebrate your resurrection of the world and the resurrection of mankind and the resurrection of technology...
But it's unexpected prices.
That you know, there has to be a balance in everything, and there will always be a give and a take, and that there's no right answer to it necessarily, because you've completed the game, you've won, but just like at the end of Illusions of Gaia, the humans are happy in their villages, the villages being cities, but the Earth is not necessarily.
Yeah, but even before you get to the end of the game, there's parts earlier on, you know, during the whole human part, where you think you're doing the right things and everything is... Basically, they surprise you, and you really honestly should play this game. And if you can't, I'm going to describe something to you that, in my experience, would be the same experience as playing Terranigma. So if you go out and you buy a really cute dog, stay with me on this, Cap. Buy a really cute dog, let's say a Welsh Corgi, and you love that dog. He's Ayn from Cowboy Bebop. He's really cool. He's your best friend. And then you have to give him up one day, and then you kill yourself. That's what Terranigma, that is the Terranigma experience to me.
That is
the experience in a nutshell.
So if you want to live that horrible fantasy without any dire consequences, play Terranigma.
Yeah.
Please. Oh,
I hope you'll all agree.
I disagree, but
I don't.
I do think it ends on a note of hope, though, and I think that's important.
You're wrong.
I think
you're all wrong.
Well, it depends on how you interpret the ending.
It ends on a note of my tears.
But I mean, you're definitely crying, and I know that the ending is open to interpretation. But even if you don't take that slightly more hopeful interpretation of the ending, like, you're still kind of like, net benefit is good, even if the cost really sucks. I liked it being painful and beautiful.
I feel like to interpret the closing after credits sequence in Terranigma, you need only look to the closing after credits sequence of Illusions of Gaia to kind of get in the headspace of where the creators are on the matter specifically, and that might help you. And I there's some translated interviews with the creators of the game, and they did imply that there were a lot of things where they really wanted to leave it open-ended so you, the gamer, would imagine your own conclusions, that they themselves do not have a correct interpretation of it.
Oh, I like that. I think it's very in keeping with the fact that they're not trying to lecture you on something. They're trying to explore themes.
So Brandon, unfortunately, won't be there, but the rest of us are all going to be at Camp Fangamer.
Well,
this
I'll be
year.
Dead, so yes.
Yay!
Thank you.
Wait, what?
Just, you know, in general.
Yeah, he has priorities. He
I'm
wants
taking
to...
a long sleep. The big nap, the walk with the fishes,
you're gonna
the sky,
die of thirst and be reborn as a dolphin.
That's right. That's what
I'm trying
to do.
Camp Fangamer, if you listen to the show, you've probably heard me rant and rave about it, but if you haven't, it is a incredible multimedia festival centered around Earthbound. In this case, it's Mother 3. It was Earthbound last year. And it's going to be July 29th through the 21st in Tucson, Arizona. Tickets are still available, and you should totally come out.
Isn't there a town called Tucson and Mother?
Arizona.
That's the joke.
I know, I know. Oh my God, it's the best thing ever.
I get it now.
Sorry.
I thought it was pronounced Tucson. That's what I'm reading.
It's like an alternate reality game that you live for a weekend. And I did an extensive review of it last year, so we'll link to that on this episode's page along with any other stuff that we mentioned here. And this episode has actually acted in some aspects as the genesis for a panel that has not been approved yet, but we hope to be presenting.
I'll put a good word for you.
On the nature of the death and reincarnation of the world in the Quintet trilogy, and also how that pertains to Mother 3 in some aspects.
I think I've got some better ideas of how to loop Mother 3 into this discussion.
I'm so excited.
Now, you fine folks, what stuff are you doing currently, aside from going to Camp Fangamer, that the people listening should know about?
Well, I've been streaming Mother 3, actually, and I'm getting really close to the end, so that's exciting. And my band, The Returners, is hopefully we'll do some more big events, but we don't have anything on the calendar yet. It's been a busy semester, but we'll have more stuff. And if you're in Austin, Texas, just look up The Returners. We play local shows. And the Returners VGM. We're not the same as the band in California, although they are named for Final Fantasy VI, so I approve of them.
How about you, Adil?
I've got nothing too exciting going on. I am fasting for Ramadan for the next 28 days now. And so this is the first time I'm fasting in Arizona in the 110 degree weather. So that's pretty cool.
Ooh.
As for Fangamer, we're just, you know, keeping up with all the new stuff like Undertale orders.
Oh, my God.
Trying to think what else. I don't know. I'm like kind of getting a little lightheaded from not having eaten or drank all day. So.
Wait, oh, no. Aren't you on like your first day?
No, this is the third day of fasting.
Oh, geez. When, so you can't wait. I don't know how you live. How do you survive? Do you
after sundown, right?
Yeah, so after sunset.
Oh, okay. So basically you become a vampire for 28 days? That's pretty cool.
Yes.
Is it like LARPing?
Yeah.
I want to try it. I wouldn't last an hour. I'm sorry.
What I do is every year on the last Friday of Ramadan, I invite as many people as possible to fast with me just to kind of show a side of Islam that most people don't see, because Islam has a really bad rap, and I think a lot of it is yes. Just based on misunderstanding, and I think Ramadan is a really beautiful part of the faith, and I think even just on a secular level, if you're not a religious person, you can at least appreciate what Ramadan represents.
Do your friends usually, like, on the last day, are they like, oh, this is so hard, and you're like, guys, I've been doing this for 28 days, you're wusses.
Yeah, kind of. You say, like, people will be like, you know, I'll fast with you, but I gotta drink water because otherwise I won't be able to make it. Or I'll fast with you, but just for a couple hours or something.
So no water even?
Yeah, no water.
Whew.
That's gotta be hard in 110 degree heat.
Yep,
no Mountain Dew Code Red.
Let me check the Quran. Let me see if
I don't think that counts as food.
Yeah, that's not a
technically.
Food.
Technically, there's no nutritional value. In fact, it probably makes you hungrier or dehydrates you.
Probably, so, yeah.
Man. It's like the machines in Chrono Trigger. You still feel hungry.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you're still hungry.
Yeah. Speaking of food, if people are going to come to Camp Fangamer, look for me. I'll be either Paula or Toriel, and I might have butterscotch cinnamon cookies and or banana nut bread.
Ooh,
does that seem thematically relevant? Ooh. I like to bake, so come say hi to me. You can't miss me. I'll have a flute.
Awesome.
So we're going to leave on a song as normal, and I'll let Lauren introduce that. But before we do that, I want to leave you with one final thought on the nature of Terranigma and the death and resurrection of the world, and potentially how little we know about the prehistory of the world and intelligent life on it. This is from the New York Herald Tribune newspaper, the 16th of February, 1947.
Oh, geez.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When the first atomic bomb exploded in New Mexico, the desert sand turned to fused green glass. This fact, according to the magazine Free World, has given certain archaeologists a turn. They've been digging in the ancient Euphrates Valley and have uncovered a layer of agrarian culture 8,000 years old, and a layer of herdsman culture much older, and a still older caveman culture. But recently they reached another layer, a layer of fused green glass.
I don't believe you, and I have to look this up as soon as this is over, because if that's true, holy shit.
Well, there's also many, many reasons that there could be fused green glass.
Like a meteor hitting the desert.
Yep.
Okay.
So, but, you know.
Or a civilization that was once thriving and had technology that created atom bombs and then killed society. And then we came back years later when we finally evolved again.
Obviously, there's lots of things about the ancient world, the myths that I was hoping to find pertaining to this. So if you know of any mythological parallels to Terranigma, please email me at cap@nerdyshow.com and we will work it into our presentation at Camp Fangamer. Anyway, Lauren, tell us about the track that's taken us out.
Okay, so this is actually several years old. It's a cover of Ark's hometown, Krista. It's called Krista Blue, which makes sense if you have played the game. But this is me playing it on flute and some other instruments. So I hope you enjoy it.
And thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much to Matt Cox for requesting this topic, which obviously we were quite excited by.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll see you at Camp Fangamer. If not, we'll see you next week on Nerdy Show. Thank you.
thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all of your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
And that's the show, guys.
We're still recording.
It's still recording.
Yay.
Penis.
Yeah, you can get that on there.
I needed to get that out. Okay. I need to get the penis off my chest.
We could have talked about penises during the show. I mean,
I didn't think of it.
Thank you, Cap, for roughing me.
Yeah, no, that did count, I think. I think that counted.